You are really in for a treat tonight. So our first student introducer is Tierney Ray. Come on up.
So I get to introduce Sean Prentice, who I've been fortunate enough to learn from for the past, year and a half. So it's been an adventure. Sean Prentice is the author of Finding Abby, A Search for Edward Abbey and His Hidden Grave, a National Outdoor Book Award winner, a Utah, a New Mexico, and an Arizona Book Award winner, and Vermont and Colorado Book Awards finalist. He co-authored Environmental and Nature Writing, A Craft Guide and Anthology, and co-edited The Far Edges of the Fourth Genre. Sean is also an editor for several Bloomsbury Publishers creative writing textbooks, and just with how much he gets done, it's always surprising that he has time to teach his students. He's an environmental writer, and he has spent many, many hours working with VCFA students, particularly the second years, to expand our own writing, both through the exploration of place in our stories and by helping us build trail markers for our thesis projects. Near the beginning of this semester in Critical Essay, Sean asked what we as writers would be willing to give up for the time to write, and the responses varied from video games to sleep to everything. And I, for one, am very grateful that he didn't put teaching on his own list for this year, because we would have missed out on valuable guidance and this chance to hear him read from one of his own forays into creative wilderness.
Thanks, Tierney. I appreciate that. It's great to see my second year students that I know really well. And it's also exciting to see a lot of the first year students that some of you I'm getting to know, and I know I will get to know you all. And it's strange because when I look at the second year students, I think about how I remember looking at them last year, just being like, I don't know who these folks are. I don't know if they're any good or not, but they're not like last year's group. And then last year's group was shipped out and I get to work with them, and now I love them and it's been so much fun. And now I get to explore who these first years are, so I'm very excited. I'm going to read two short essays. For the last, year and a half, everything I've read has been from Finding Abby. So I thought I'm going to try to not read anything from Finding Abby, and instead I'm going to read two really depressing essays. So we'll have a fun night. All right, the first essay is called Clarion, Pennsylvania. One. I'm wandering Main Street, walking past the early closing restaurants, the hot dog shop, the tuxedo stand renting $69 suits. In this town of 2,000 people, Doug, who needs this many suits? How many weddings and proms or funerals can this town hold? Two, though I've never visited Clarion before, everything feels exactly as it should and just as sad. This visit, we both know, is 22 years too late. I should have wandered these streets built on the back of lumber and oil and coal and now poverty when you and I were kids. Not on some random drive from Michigan to Bangor, our hometown on the other side of this weary state. You could have showed me your dorm, your wrestling room, the gym where you battled those other heavyweights. You could have said, we'll need a 119-pounder next year, and I would have just smiled. But just like always, everything changes, never in the ways we expect. Three, 22 years ago, you were a high school wrestling champion. I envisioned myself as a lightweight champion, and though you weighed 100 pounds more than I did, still we trained together that summer of 1989 in Bangor's wrestling room. You took hundreds or thousands of phantom single-leg shots preparing for your freshman season here at Clarion. I prepared for states as a senior at Bangor High. Those were our dreams. Four, how is it that one tire town, Clarion, can remind me so much of another, Bangor? Even when each slumps into oblivion so far apart, 254 miles. How is it that a town built on lumber can resemble so much a town built on slate? Doug, I walk these sloped streets and I see kids 20 years younger than us, and I wonder if you would have kissed any of them, or I guess their mothers. When I think of you, you are always 18 and forever. Five. We grew up in a town, Doug, that every highway bypassed. Our town was slouching porches, buckled barns, winding back roads leading from nowhere to nowhere. Though so few of us escaped Bangor's magnetic pull of unemployment, poverty, and alcoholism, you wrestled your way to a scholarship at Clarion, another town the highways all bypassed. Doug, Is it strange that I'm talking to the air here in Clarion? Talking to yesterday's breeze? 6. This evening, walking Main Street, everything is filtered through failure or sorrow. Everything is sepia. The heavyset fathers walk home from work, the sagging mothers with children in tow, the for rent signs, they all remind me of Bangor, though I don't know a single person here. I wish I knew a single person here, I say, to a brick apartment building. 7. The summer of 1989, you and I practiced those single leg takedowns until we were sweat and fatigue. That summer night, I drove home. That summer night, 4 months before you would have moved to Clarion, you got drunk at some party. Later, while I slept deeply, you flipped and flipped and flipped your Mercury links down a back road that leads forever to nowhere, except for fire and death and a granite stone in a cemetery overlooking our rows of cornfields. 8. Age and time makes memory brittle, but tonight as I walk Clarion, I'm washed in memory. Doug, I see before me the sharp cut of your jaws, the way your body moved as we practice. I almost see you driving to Clarion that autumn after your death, your car packed high with whatever we kids owned. And as a thin fog settles over this sleepy town, a blanket to comfort all of us, I convince myself that I can almost remember you during your almost freshman year. Maybe we would have walked past Ween's clothing store after your wrestling match against Edinburgh. You would have flirted with some girl beneath these globe streetlights. I would have looked into the windows of Michelle's Cafe and dreamed of wrestling here next year. Earlier that evening, I would have watched you wrestle a heavyweight so big, he would have seemed to be myth or monster. In the third period, the score would have been tied 6-6. You would have been beneath the other wrestler. The crowd, all of us, the lumbermen and their clucking wives, your father and mother in for the weekend, all the prettiest girls, all the boys like me who dreamed of being you, all of us. We lean over the mat, almost hugging you two wrestlers. We fall silent, worried about the toll these small town battles take. Doug, how much can you carry? 9. With 30 seconds on the clock, the seconds ticking forever away, you do a flawless stand-up. Once on your feet, you peel your opponent's grip and escape. You escape, right? You have to escape. 10. Clarion is as lonely as a breeze. Clarion is as empty as a heartbeat. Clarion is dark, and I need a deep night of sleep. So that's the first essay. And that's about my high school mentor, Doug, and a brilliant wrestler, a kind human, a wonderful person. And I will buy anyone a beer who knows the poem that I stole from and dispersed throughout. So I should have offered that in the beginning, but if you know, it's a Midwestern poet who died of alcoholism. Now, what poem? This was a sports essay, so now think of his sports poems.
The one about the football players?
Yeah.
Galloping against each other?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I owe you a beer. I owe you a beer. All right, to wrap up my half of the evening, I am going to read another depressing essay. This one's about buying a house. I don't know if any of you are homeowners. Any homeowners out there? All right, I'm a homeowner, now very happily a homeowner, and this is about my first house. It's called Buying a House. As Chad the Realtor slows his car onto quiet Lockwood Avenue, he says, "This is 724 Lockwood. Tell me what you think." Chad and I are searching for our first home to buy. I've just gotten a new job as a tenure-track professor here in Western Michigan. I guess I'm ready to settle down. I guess after a life moving town to town, 15 states in the last 20 years, it's time to plant roots. Chad and I were on the fifth house today. The first house we checked on had a huge front porch and sat in an upscale neighborhood. You could make 50 grand off this house, Chad said. And inside the house had a gutted kitchen, sagging floors, ruined sheetrock. A fixer-upper for sure, Chad said. Thought of the time needed to put the house back together, how I'd rather write or travel than drywall and spackle. We moved on. The second and third houses had moldy basements and cracked foundations. Chad just nodded toward the front door. We left without seeing the upstairs. The fourth house had such a cute kitchen that I felt as if I'd need a trophy wife and a cooing baby before I moved into the house to live happily ever after. As we stop at this Lockwood house, the first thing, The very first thing that I notice is the front porch. Chad must know what I'm thinking because he says, "Look at that screened-in porch." I'm a sucker for sitting outside, for watching the world go by. I walk onto the porch. I turn around. I listen to the screen door slap shut, and I stare back at the quiet street. A basketball net on rollers, a beat-up pickup truck, a tricycle tipped over on the sidewalk, chalk drawings in front of a neighbor's house. I imagine early autumn, my feet up on a table, a Pabst, maybe grading student essays in the afternoon sun, or reading a book of poetry, Richard Hugo. No, James Wright. Suddenly I realize he writes that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom, and I think this could be my street, my porch, mine. Then the scene changes and I'm no longer reading James Wright. Instead, my next lover, a girl I have yet to meet, but I can see her perfectly. Rounded cheeks, face in a grin, thin lips, long brown hair, curly, is standing on this porch. It is our first day-to-date we laughed through at a restaurant, later the long walk home. And it is the latest dusk, nearing dark. Lockwood is quiet, the air cold, nearing freezing, the air still. Standing on my porch, I lean toward her. Chad unlocks the front door and holds it open. I walk into a tiny foyer, as Chad says, 1,900 square feet, a house to grow into. I barely hear Chad. Instead, I see my father visiting from three states away. As he walks in the front door, I reach for his leather coat. As I see my dad's future visit, I think about how, for most of my adult years, I felt like I wasn't living up to what my dad expected. I felt that I wasn't being successful, though he's always been supportive of every one of my harebrained ideas. But I've always felt that, sure, I was skiing and traveling and even earning my degree, but I wasn't successful in the ways that I thought he cared about. But now I'm tenure track, a real job, a real life. Standing in the foyer, I almost mumble those words, a real job, a real life. I imagine my father talking to his friends over glasses of Merlot. My youngest son, Sean, remember him? Just got a tenure track job in Michigan, teaching creative writing. He's buying a house, an old Craftsman. As Chad leads me into the older kitchen, he says, "The kitchen needs work, but it's an easy redo." I think about how I'll never redo this kitchen. No stainless steel appliances, no tile floors, no fresh paint on the walls. I'll just put a wooden table, old and worn and scratched, and found at a house that I rented in Idaho in the corner. I'll buy two thrift store chairs. As Chad points out the dishwasher, the gas stove, the cabinets, I find myself in the future. God, this house has a way of transporting me to nights alone. Crockpots made during long weekends, the smell of stew blanket in the house. I'll read a magazine while eating a quick meal. The second chair at the table unmoved for weeks or months. Waiting. Waiting for that next lover. Or has she already left? I'll wash the few dishes, leaving the kitchen as clean as I find it today. In the master bedroom, and whenever I hear master bedroom, I imagine a canopy bed, pink walls, doilies on the bureau. Chad pulls up the blinds, and the afternoon sun blinds me with its dazzling light, illuminating the dust in the air. I twist from the sun as Chad moves into the living room, giving me time, time. I need time. With the bedroom empty of furniture, I turn a slow circle, arms outstretched, touching empty space, empty space, empty space. I imagine this bedroom after I move in, a single bed with poorly fitted sheets. They come undone every night. I toss and turn. A nightstand for my book of the week. A mediocre collection of essays, later a novel by Abby. A dresser full of wrinkled clothes. What else? My cell phone. What else? House keys. What else? Sneakers. A dress shirt in the closet. What else? Nothing. What else? Nothing. A room to fill with nothing. But maybe in a year or in two or three, my next lover, the one I kissed on the porch, will move in. In another year, she'll become my wife. And I question alone in this bedroom, how is it possible that after 20 years of not getting married, dodging three marriage proposals, that now I can no longer stop thinking about marriage? It's not that I want to get married. It's just friends married. Family and friends expecting me married. My mother asking, "Have you met any nice girls in Michigan?" "Not yet, Mom. Not yet." I think to my future lover and how once she becomes my wife, the small bed will be replaced by a queen. She will hang new blinds on these windows, though we'll never shut them, let the sun flood us. The old furniture moved out, donated, and my keys, they'll end up in a clay dish that my wife will buy at a flea market just for these keys. And when I toss my keys in the dish, the clanging will remind me of something, though I'll never figure out exactly what. In the living room, I run my hands along the hardwood floors. Chad says, "Oak, the same wood I have in my house." In 5 years or 10 or 15, if I buy this house, this very house, will these floors only feel the slow steps of my feet quietly moving room to room, the lonely steps of me coming home day after day from work at a university? Or will, some distant year, there be the patter of a child, a daughter, a little girl in pigtails, running over these slick floors, her giggles bouncing off the walls? I've never wanted kids or a wife, or even in these last few years, a girlfriend, but now I'm studying the creaking of these floors like an Indian in 1916 Western, with his ear pressed to the track, listening for the sound of an oncoming train, and I'm listening for the pattering of a child's steps. I don't want 4 a.m. wake-ups. I don't want to change diapers. I don't want to have to burp her on my shoulder. I don't want to have to teach her to throw. Okay, maybe I want to teach her to throw. First an awkward sidearm, later a laser. Good job, girl. But in this living room, warm with its yellow walls, it feels as if I buy this house, this very house, this Lockwood house, I'll need a child. Not just because I'll own the house, but because if I own the house, this house will need a child. Is this just me telling lies, trying to pretend it's not my wants? The child's voice bouncing off the walls, her cries from her bedroom calling to me, only to me, during the middle of the night. She has such cute nightmares. She says, monsters in the closet. She says, she dreams, but she couldn't find me. And as I envision all this, I can't find her mother. I can't find her at all. I grow desperate. Where is she? The yellow walls blind me. Chad asks, do you need more time? I want to say, just a minute, 1 minute, though I mean a lifetime or two. I want to say, I can see all of the world. I want to say, hold me, please, someone. I want to say, every story is true and every story is a lie. Instead, I nod. Chad moves to the front porch. I hear the clicking of the door. In the living room, I stare at the ceiling until it's 40 years into the future. The mortgage paid off, the water heater and furnace twice replaced. I am 77 with a beard of gray. I lie in the queen-size bed as a chest-rattling cough runs through my body. Another. In a hallucination, I call to that future wife, wanting her by my side, holding my hand through this, never realizing, and this is for the best, that she's been gone years and years, maybe exactly 1,000 years. The divorce papers in a filing cabinet in the basement, mildewed, brittle. Or did she die young? Cancer. Such a sad story, the neighbors will whisper as they watch my daughter play on the sidewalk. When the coughing subsides, a live-in nurse, or is it my daughter, home for her father, feeds me ice chips, takes my pulse. When the day, now the minutes are done, and it is the latest dusk, the same time of year as when I first kissed that girl, I use my last energy to lift my arm. The nurse, the girl, hurriedly stands from her seat. She rests her hand on my forehead, but she struggles to understand this final moment. Am I calling to her? Am I pointing to a western sun? And this house echoes, stay down, champion, stay down. As Chad locks the front door tight, as the sun sets over 724 Lockwood, as the trees stand bare still early as spring, as the grass lays down from long winter, as a grandfather wheels in his grandson's basketball net, as three children play army, bang, 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 you're dead. I stand on the front porch and I think, I can own this house. I can own it all. Thank you.